Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It is opening day week around here. That used to mean hope and all of that stuff, but it looked like there was some hope the first opening day week up in Boston last weekend as the Orioles dispatched the Red Sox. A little rougher water in the Bronx and then home for opening day. This guy has spent some time here at Camden Yards and up the street, Memorial Stadium, and across the parking lot. We've run into each other at the Ravens-Patriot game. Never a Colts-Patriot game, although I was at a few of those, but Fataha and Sam the Bam Cunningham back in the 70s. Bob Ryan joins us from the Boston Globe, the legendary sports writer who used to make these kind of trips back in normal times for a crab cake over at Fadley's or maybe a Fenway Frank. And we're all trying to get through this thing, Bob. And I guess sports, at least for me, the last couple of weeks, March Madness, it's been putting on like a little bit of an old shoot, at least watching on television.
Well, it was good to have the tournament back, no question. I thought there was a lot of very good things in the tournament, both tournaments. Of course, more attention focused on the women than ever before for obvious reasons. And the men's tournament ended up with, well, an explosion, frankly. Because that's what Baylor did. They exploded right in Gonzaga's face. But I thought it was great to have the tournament back. It must have been an amazing feat to pull it off as well as they did. And, so let's hope that that's the last time we have to worry about something like this. And next time, next year in New Orleans, it'll be a little bit more normal.
Do you still enjoy or miss that part of it? I mean, I've done 27 Super Bowls now. I miss this one, right? So. Yeah. I felt it. You know, I felt not being on Radio Row for the first time since I was in my 20s, literally, since the franchise came here. Everything's been a little weird. I guess there's parts of it I miss after all these years. I mean, you're more of a road warrior than me going down to New York studios all those years every weekend as well. But I saw you enough on the road and saw you from the road enough to know that you spend an appreciable amount of your time away from Boston as much as you're identified with it. How's this last year been in respect to that?
Well, number one, I retired officially in 2012. So this is the 10th year of my retirement. I haven't had a full-time job since I hit the send button at the London Olympics on the gold medal basketball game. So, I mean, my life has, been totally different ever since then. But I'll say this, people were always surprised when I tell them that I love travel. I didn't love every aspect of it. It got harder and harder. You know, the airline situation post 9/11 changed our lives forever and ever in terms of logistics. And that became more of a pain. But I still like, once I got there, I like being in other cities. I like being around. I like getting around. I always said that if you're covering a team, and I covered the Red Sox for 14 years before I became a full-time columnist. And I covered the Red Sox for one full year. If you're covering a team, you're better off if you only cover the road games and let somebody else cover the home games. You learn a lot more about the team on the road than you do at home. So there's that aspect too. But I'm just talking about the travel part, the exposure to everything that's outside your normal way of life. I miss that. I do miss travel, and we were traveling a lot until last year. Hopefully, next year or by the end of this year, we'll be able to get back on the road. But I haven't been outside of New England since January 31st, 2020. I was in New Jersey and I came home and I haven't been out of New England since.
I would think there probably wasn't a month or two in your whole career and even the last 10 years. Again, I feel like I've seen you enough recently to know you're moving about the world. And even when I see you in Miami, you talk about going to a basketball game, college, you were always doing things aside from all of that. I think that that's been the weirdest part of all of this and how it all falls back together again.
As long as I've gone without getting on a plane since the summer of 1970. So that's simple as that, 51 years. Since 1970, when I started to travel regularly, it was my life. It was my part of my life. And that included after retirement, because we traveled. We've been back to, I go to Paris. I went to Paris 19 times. The last year was the first time in like 15 years we hadn't gone to Paris. For example. So, we've driven cross country twice. We've done all that stuff. Moving around was a big part of my life, and I'm anxious to get back to it.
What are you going to do? Paris? Is that the number?
I think that, you know, in terms of an international, that would definitely be, you know, because I'm very proprietary toward Paris. But there's you know, spots I haven't been to that I'd like to get to, and hopefully that'll happen. I hate to use that. I don't use that B word, you know, list, you know, but the undone, you know, unfinished business, I call it. And but I definitely want to get back to Paris. I miss Paris. Yeah.
Well, you know, I went to Paris in 98 when Agassi was insane. I was there to see Springsteen and hated it because everything was on strike. I went back twice in the last 10 years since my wife had cancer and absolutely fell in love with it. You know, like the food, the language, the city. I feel the same way. If I'm going to go back to one place in Europe, it's going to be Paris for sure.
Well, I mean, I just and you know, we should. The only problem is that we like Paris so much, we should get around other areas of France more than we have. But it's been a while since I've been, you know, we always take day trips. We go there.
But you don't build it around Roland Garros. You just go, right?
Oh, no, I know. No, nothing to do with athletics. I've never been to an athletic event. I took myself to a Paris Saint-Germain match about 4 or 5 years ago. It was an opportunity. And I went out to see Paris Saint-Germain. But that's the only sporting event that I've ever been in Paris.
Wow. Bob Ryan joining us here. There's been a lot of sporting events in Boston, Fenway Park. Bob, I guess one of the reasons I reached you, I was going to like let you have a mulligan here this time around, but I thought the next time we get together, both of these teams will suck so much. You'll be like, why are you calling me? You know, why aren't you talking about the Flower Festival or something at Baltimore Positive? So I wanted to reach you because I was watching the games over the weekend and all the things we bitched about, the old guy, the games are long, the shit, you know, like the shift and the analytics, all those things. But more than that, in the COVID era, to see sort of a somnambulant Fenway Park, almost morose. It's cold. There's people there, but not enough to make noise. On Sunday, our kid from Loyola in Baltimore has his Loyola heckling section there that you could hear on Sunday with a couple thousand people there. It was a little bit of a depressing start, and we won 3 games. You know what I mean? We swept, and it didn't feel Eddie Fainter. And I know I dropped that on you last year because I feel like this is a real season, but it does feel like a real low end for both of these franchises at a time where both of these storied franchises at various points have really electrified these cities, and they're not in a position to do that right now.
There's a lot of doom and gloom around here. There was a lot of skepticism about the trend of the team since the transformation from Dave Dombrowski to Chaim Bloom. And people are really wary about his MO and et cetera, and skeptical. They had a so-so spring training. They scored a lot of runs. They said they improved the defense. Well, the defense was woeful, as you know. The defense contributed very directly to the first two losses and had even a little impact in the third one. And it was bad. People were very, you know, there's not a lot of happiness around here about the Red Sox, no question. And that worries me. You know, the people, you know, they better start winning some games and get people back. And I was supposed to go to opening day. I couldn't. We got rained because we got weathered out on Thursday, and I was unable to go Friday. And you know, as the makeup day, and I didn't get to any games. I haven't been to my. Hopefully, the next homestand. I'm a season ticket holder, so the next homestand. Hopefully, I'll make my Fenway.
So you don't sit up on the roof on the box looking straight down. You have like a seat.
No, I've had 4 seats since 1991, in Fenway, and we debated. We renewed. You know, it was a debate.
But it is a debate, isn't it?
Well, it is a debate because it's a lot of money, I'll tell you. And you got to really make sure that you're going to handle your tickets. You know, 81 games, that's a lot of games. And you know, obviously you're not going to, you know, you're only going to a certain percentage of them. You're moving your tickets. You know, it's a lot to consider. But we still, you know, we talked about it. My wife still likes, she wants to go. And that's fine. So as long as she's eager to go, then I said, fine, we'll do it. And, you know, we bring people and we still enjoy baseball. Now, you made an allusion to the shifting and the long games and stuff. And that does concern me about baseball. But that's a general complaint, not just a specific, you know, it's endemic to Boston. That's baseball's big overall. They have many big overall problems, but that's one of them.
Well, I keep going back to the original sin. I've been on, this is my 30th year on radio, Bob. And I remember back in the beginning when this was built. By the way, we have a 2-year lease. Isn't that great news? The 2 more years they're committed to our community here after building this 30 years ago. And all these years later, I think back to the early 90s. And the original sin was always like, we had all the money and nobody had it. It was us in the Blue Jays then, right? And the Yankees were trying to figure it out. And the Red Sox were, but when you're winning and you're spending all the money and you're signing Roberto Alomar and when you're that team, it feels good, but it's kind of the dirty secret of the sport. They've never gotten the money right. They've never gotten the distribution of it right. The original sin is really the owners and the players fighting, and they're apparently about to do that all over again, right? Like, that's the part that never ends. That's the feud. Forget Yankees and Red Sox or me versus Peter Angelos. The real fight is owners versus players. And that's been at the core of what kind of screws the game up.
Look at the fact that we don't have a universal DH because it's a negotiating tool. It should not be a negotiating tool at all. It should be a common sense thing in 2021. And it's just a warning. We're told that look out that there will be very difficult negotiations. Yeah, baseball doesn't. They got to understand who they are in society and who they're not. It's not 1910. It's not 1975. It's not even 2005. Baseball's got some real general problems with demographics, with renewal of interest, with a lack of black participation, which leads to lack of black fandom. And then the games in the 3-out, lots of problems. But I'm rambling. Yes, there is a definite conflict. Nobody trusts anybody. It's not good. And I worry about this. Of course, that's going to be a real problem.
Well, the one thing in this market that I've just found unbelievable that I'm not willing to shill for these people is that they had to burn it down. They had to get rid of everybody. They had to stink for 5 years. We read Astro Ball. We hired those guys who cheated, by the way. For us to do that after all this Masson money came in that he pilfered away from the Nationals guy. But I'm thinking if I'm a Red Sox fan, that's what I'm not crying a river for Red Sox fans, you or Shaughnessy or any of the fun you've had the last 20 years on the football or baseball field. But there was something a little depressing about it that I felt a little sorry thinking, like, if you're a vested Red Sox fan and you do fork over the 4-season books and like all of that, why did they have to play the Devil Rays game? You know what I mean? Why do they have to go into the we don't want to spend money, we're going to get rid of Mookie Betts? That didn't make any sense to me.
That's the question that people are asking. There's no question. You know, they talk about payroll flexibility and they're selling this, trying to sell this message that the way to maintain a continuity and be able to contend for years and years is to take that financial step backwards to be able to take a financial step forward in the years to come, which includes letting the best two-way player that I have ever seen in a Red Sox uniform go. And you know who that is. Nobody combined offense and defense to the degree, in my opinion, that Mookie Betts did. The only closest thing would be Yastrzemski in his prime. And of course, he couldn't run the bases at all. And he could never run them as well as Mookie Betts, one of the best base runners in baseball. And there's no flaw in Mookie Betts' game. It was awful to think that was one path toward, turning it around, was letting the best all-around player that I've ever seen in a Red Sox uniform go. People are angry, and the whole outfield, that outfield situation.
People here aren't angry about Machado, right? They get their next Cal Ripken. They use a draft pick. The kid's a turd. They knew that when they drafted him. He's a kid who's a turd. Now he's on a third team turd on a $400 million deal. But like, nobody here is like, they're mad about Chris Davis or whatever, but the bar is so low.
I want to get back to a point, one reference you made, which is, do people here have a right to be angry about anything? And in fact, the answer is no. We have owned the 21st century. Boston has been the most successful, fortunate fan base overall, the only city with a championship in each of the 4 major team sports. Which came in one point in a 7-year run from 2004 to 2011, each of the 4 teams won. It was remarkable. The Red Sox fans do not have a right to complain about anything in general, given that we have had 4 parades since 2004, the most recent one 3 years ago. They tend to forget very quickly about the 86-year drought. I'm sorry, I'm not sympathetic to people complaining about this whole thing. And we who are we, you know, compared to any other set of fans? So we had it really good, and sometimes it just so happened. But what your point about, but they still have money, and why are they acting this way? This is the way they're looking at it. But if you can just take a step back, come on. I mean, you're complaining, and we've had four parades since 2004, and you're complaining. I find that hard. And then you throw in the whole Patriots thing. Now, you know, I always don't understand people who aren't overlap sports fans, people who only follow one team. So I can't imagine that. I don't relate to that. I think you got to lump it all in here. We've had an incredible, we're very fortunate. So I'm embarrassed to think that Boston sports fans are complaining about anything, frankly.
What'd you make of Brady from afar? I don't think anybody ever thought they'd see this, or this is the way the story would end. I don't know that Peyton Manning ever saw himself in a Broncos jersey or, you know, whatever it would be. But this has been supernatural.
You got to go back to 2017. You got to go back to the drafting of Garoppolo and the trade of Garoppolo. I mean, now this is me speaking, but I think I reflect a school of thought. You know, it's not exclusive to me. I reflect a school of thought, which is that Bill Belichick thought he had found the heir apparent. It was Garoppolo, and that Tom would be retiring, going off into the sunset fairly soon at this time in 2017. And when he ultimately found out that wasn't going to happen, and Tom, it was basically, a 2-on-1. He was outvoted by Tom and his surrogate father, Bob Kraft. And so he trades Garoppolo, and he does so on fill in the blank cents on the dollar, 70, 80, maybe less on the dollar, to a very a nice place, to a franchise whose people he likes and a coach he liked and respected. Just gave him a good home, in other words. He didn't exile him to some football Siberia. He did not want to make that trade. That was against Belichick's. And the proof is he didn't get full value. Okay. Now, A, B, Tom Brady gave an interview. I think it was Jim Gray and Westwood One. Asked something, words to this effect. Do you feel sufficiently appreciated, or was it respected in Boston? And his answer was, I plead the fifth. And from that moment on, people should have been placed on notice. This might not end very well. And it didn't. And he was ready to leave. He wanted out. And the other thing is, he looked at the roster that he would be playing with in 2020, as opposed to the potential of the roster that he chose to go with, and said, I like that roster in Tampa Bay a lot better than I like the one I'm going to play in Boston. And guess what? He guessed right.
It's an incredible story. I mean, against everything that we've seen of a guy of this age, right? Like, I mean, you have literally witnessed, you think you witnessed something with Jordan or LeBron or whatever, the Cal Ripken here in Baltimore. You know, you see these generational things. The Brady thing's on a different level at this point. The Buccaneers thing's a different, in the middle of a pandemic, new franchise in a place with, he took some turds, the Antonio Brown types and the Ndamukong Suh. You know, there's guys that were not winners, and they all walk home with rings, including my buddy Ryan Jensen.
But Tom, tried to get recruit Brown the first time in Boston. That didn't work. It lasted for one touchdown pass in, I think, 3 weeks. And he'll screw up sooner or later, probably Brown. But, they milked something out of him. Sue, we all made up our mind about what we think about him years ago. But he can still play to a degree. And obviously he helped them. But, yeah, Tom, it was a different coaching, a much different personality coach. I think Tom really welcomed the more humane people-oriented aspect that of Arians, as opposed to the business-like aspect of Bill. And, I wonder if there's going to be any Christmas cards exchanged in the long run between those two,
a lot of reunions down the line, huh?
No, but that'll be an interesting one to see how that shakes out. But the Brady thing obviously was, I won't say unique, but it was extraordinary that can you imagine if you mentioned Cal, can you imagine if Cal wound up playing for the Royals? Or run up playing for the Indians instead of ending in Baltimore. But this is, and I, But when you do go back to that interview with Jim, when he said, I plead the fifth, I went, just get your hand left, get ready. Something might happen here.
Well, Tom's been a little more outspoken since 40 than he was before 40. Bob Ryan joining us here from Boston, emeritus, as he's pointed out, since 2012. I don't think he'll ever stop. Still giving me pizza recommendations there. All right, last thing. Let's go back to baseball for 1 minute because of the news about the All-Star game and antitrust. I mean, I know you've been writing about this forever. Came closer to home for me when the Nationals came into existence. And I sort of realized in retrospect when I started researching and writing the Peter Principles about Angelos that the antitrust was sort of in the middle of the Nationals ever existing in D.C. and sort of, going back to Jim Bunning and these different eras where the boogeyman was going to come and make them honor, operate honestly instead of an 18th century rules or whatever, 19th century rules or whatever it was. The All-Star game thing's a fascinating story for me to see where baseball is in this and where Republicans are on this and where the state of Colorado would be on taking the game. That Manfred was a little bit proactive instead of fighting the fight and taking the thing to Georgia and having everybody pissed off. But baseball in the middle of a political debate, football's been there with Kaepernick for going on 5 years now, right?
Yep. Oh, so much to unpack here. I was a little surprised that baseball would be so forthright about it. I'm not sure what the ultimate motivation is. Are they trying to have a now I'm just blowing this out there. I have no idea. Let's see if it sticks against the wall. Are they trying, is this part of maybe a overall concept that they want to demonstrate an allegiance to the Black community and as a large fixture because they need Black support to make this game grow in the regrow, in the 21st century.
Do you think they patronize that or they really
believe it? I don't know.
That?
I just know.
Or do any of these old white guys think they're going to live long enough to go broke doing it this way?
I don't know. But I mean, the fact is that, we know what this is all about. This is about the belief among those who that this Georgia voting rights bill is specifically designed to disenfranchise Black voters. It's a reaction to the 2020 election, that's that. But now, the All-Star, and just so happened that the All-Star games in Atlanta and gave baseball a chance to make an immediate statement. If the All-Star game had not been in Atlanta, we wouldn't be having this discussion, obviously.
Well, you can't wrap yourself around Jackie Robinson the way they tried over the last 25 years.
They've tried to do that to a degree, but this was so complicated because number one, you had the whole Hank Aaron aspect. By doing this, they're going to take away the opportunity to celebrate Hank Aaron in the town where he had so much success. It's the idea that any boycott, with like any international sanction, does hurting the little people, including some of the people you're trying to protect. I'm sure there's going to be a fallout among people, Black merchants and workers who would have profited from having that All-Star game are not going to have that opportunity now. Everyone, you always have to take that into consideration. There's going to be a fallout a collateral damage, if you will, from, do these things. I'm a little surprised baseball did it. Look, as a left-leaning person, I'm happy to see them make this stand against what clearly was in my mind, a very brazen attempt to do what they're trying to do, which is disenfranchise Black voters. And that's what
I call it, suppression.
So I'm just a little more surprised, but I mean, do I support it? Yeah, I support it. And, I'm proud, but I applaud that baseball was willing to do this. Otherwise, I just learned something interesting today in a factoid reading USA Today. Christine Brennan, or was it Nancy Armour, whichever one, I forget who wrote it, but about Augusta. And Rob Manfred is a member of Augusta. And you know, there's people are saying, well, what about Augusta? Should, you know, well, you know, how are people going to react to the Masters this week, you know, in this whole regard, you know? I'm just saying, you know, very interesting. But Rob Manfred's a member at Augusta. I wonder.
Well, they've had a long legacy of, leadership all categories in that fairway.
Everybody's waiting for Mr. Ridley is the new chairman. I'm waiting for his press conference, I guess, today, Wednesday, as we speak, and see how that goes. I know, interesting.
Well, we're supposed to stick to sports, Bob, right? I mean, just stick to sports. It's just that easy, right?
Impossible to do that in this, but you can't do it in this day and age. It's not there. Look at basketball players, LeBron and company. Also, hey, the whole thing in Georgia, those two senators, among other things, have to thank the Atlanta Dream. I mean, there is no question that the WNBA players had an effect on that election, a direct effect. And those two senators would not be in today if it weren't for the Atlanta Dream. How about that?
Women's basketball is something always enjoyed. You've always written about. And you did make right in the very beginning of the conversation where we got into the Red Sox or Angelos or any of the, you know, this stuff about the women's tournament really being elevated recently, women broadcasters on men's game. There's been an integration in that sport. Unlike one female broadcaster on baseball and ESPN, basketball is more co-ed, maybe even than soccer, although, soccer's got its community, but from where it was to where it is, especially 3.5 million viewers for the women's game. The women's game is appealing for people that like basketball.
Well, it's moving into another strata. For the longest time, the most a preponderance, I won't say all, but a preponderance of male fans of the women's game were fathers, brothers, uncles, grandparents, and next door neighbors of female players, period. And interesting thing happened in this tournament. The UConn-Baylor game ended in controversy because of a foul call that was or wasn't made. They allowed the block to happen, and the game ended with UConn winning. It was a controversial circumstance. It was a debatable call in my judgment. In many other people's judgment, it was open and shut. It was a foul. I think the only way you can be sure it was a foul was the still photos that were provided and the replays. It was a tough call in real time. Okay, point is, it triggered a big Twitter debate, of which I took part, for fun, in it, defending the non-call as saying that the referees don't have the advantage that we had of seeing the replay and seeing the still photo that showed, yeah, it looks like there was some contact. Okay. I didn't think there was, but I was wrong. I'll say I was wrong. What I'm saying is we had a big discussion about that game, and that game was concurrent with a men tournament game that was taking place at the same time, which means that a lot of these good basketball fan males were watching that women's game.
More than enough to argue about it.
More than you would ever thought. We had an argument about a women's game. All we men had an argument about a women's game. That was being played in opposition to a men's game. Now, it was a more meaningful game in terms of the advancement to the Final Four. Okay, sorry. But the point I'm saying, see, this is a big step up. I think this in itself was noteworthy. And I did tweet that. You guys, what we're doing here, that all these men are debating this. This was a significant moment for the women's game, I think. Now, I've been an advocate of it since 1992 when I was at the Olympics, my first Olympics. And I covered not only the Dream Team, but every women's game as well. I covered basketball, period. And I saw the whole tournament, and I became a fan of these athletes, these women's game. And I've been following it, in a certain sense ever since. And I've seen And I appreciate the women's game, which I would describe as the men's game of 30 years ago or 40 years ago. You're not going to have the aerial dynamic. You're not going to have the blocks. You're not going to have the alley-oops. You're not going to have all that stuff. But you got really fundamentally excellent basketball. And I enjoy the women's game. And more and more men are now coming around to this. But I think the fact that we had a major Twitter debate about a women's game was a milestone, frankly.
Bob, when you get to Baltimore, we're going to get you a proper crab cake over at Fadley's and treat you right. We get you back down here. I don't know what the hell that would be for a meaningful game here between the Orioles and Red Sox or the Ravens and the Patriots. Maybe we could get you for that. But always good to visit with you. Always stay safe up there and always following your work. I'm your biggest fan. Appreciate you.
Take care. See you.
Bob Ryan joining us here from the Boston Globe and Boston area. You can find me in our Wise Conversations at BaltimorePositive.com. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore Positive.